Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Sports Business Radio launched in 2004. Brian Berger has interviewed the biggest names in sports and business. Let's step into the Sports Business Radio vault and look back on some of our favorite conversations. This week, we look back at Brian's trip to Europe last year with interviews with Martin Ling, the director of football operations for Leighton Orient, one of England's oldest football clubs, and Nigel Travis, the chairman of Leighton Orient. Now, enter the Sports Business Radio Vault. Now, here's Brian's conversation with Martin Ling from September 2022.
I'm here with Martin Ling, who is the director of football operations for Leighton Orient. They are one of England's oldest football clubs. 1881 is when they started. Second oldest, right? Martin, thanks for joining me on Sports Business Radio. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thanks, Brian. Yeah, all good. And when you say it like that, second oldest club, it's home. When people talk about it, there's a lot of tradition and a lot of people gone before us, that's for sure.
Yeah, a lot of history.
Yeah, big history.
I mean, when I'm over here from America, I see pitches that are older than America. I mean, it's really between cricket and football, there's a lot of history here.
Yeah, there is. I mean, obviously, football goes back a long way, as does cricket. And yeah, when you say in 1881, you know, you're talking, what's that, 140 years we're talking. It's an awful long time. And yeah, as you say, there's a lot of history and a lot of traditions within the football pyramid that's a very big pyramid.
Now, in America, we've got the NFL, we've got the NBA, Major League Baseball, National Hockey League. I've wanted to do this for a long time, come to Europe and dig into the business of European sport. And there's no sport bigger than football. So that's what we're going to do this week. We're going to talk to you really about the football operation side of it.
Yep.
And then next week, we're going to talk to Nigel Travis, who's the chairman of Leighton Orient, about the business operations and what they're doing with streaming and, you know, some of the other clever things. Sports betting here is, I think, light years ahead of where America is at this point. But let's dig into the football operations side. Let's start with some basics. The structure of English football, there's various leagues. You fall into EFL League Two, but for our audience who's not familiar with the structure of English football, how does that break down?
Yeah, I mean, we call it level four. So level one being the Premier League. Level two being the Championship, level three being League One, and then us at level four. There's one more professional league, which is the National League, where you talk about Wrexham earlier, the league they're in. But every player in that league and every team in that league will be professional as well. So that's level five. And then it starts to go part-time between like level six, seven and eight, where it goes all the way through, where we have some of our younger players that go out on loan to clubs down that level. But yeah, effectively, we're level four. Of the structure of the football pyramid. Over the years, it's had many names, but League Two is still level four, whatever way you want to look at it.
I think our audience is interested in the structure. You know, your job is to put together the roster.
Yeah.
Hire the coach and training staff and things like that. Let's start with the roster. So in America, in some of the sports like the NBA, you've got a salary cap. And you can only spend so much on your roster. How does it work here with your league?
Yeah, there's no salary cap, but we have to work. There's a financial fair play where you have to, they call it FMCP, in terms of you have to work within the boundaries, and that's to do with your revenue. So if you look at our roster, I mean, we call it a squad. The playing squad is 32 players. First team players from the age of 18 to our oldest player of 37, who's Darren Prattley. And then below that, we've got a, what we call, an under 18 team that's full time. So we've got 18 full time scholars. So they're apprentice footballers learning to be footballers. So that takes you up to 50 full time footballers coming into our training facility on a daily basis. So it's a big roster to look after, but we've got two predominant teams they play for. Obviously the first team and the youth team play every week, but we also have development games for them people that are in between. And we have both players in on loan in our football club from ILE clubs, and we loan some of it. We've got seven players out on loan at the moment that are at lower level than what we are. So even though we've got 32 players on the roster, seven of them are unavailable for me today or for the managers today to pick because they're out on loan at another club. So we've got 25 players to pick from effectively.
Give our audience an idea of what the level one first team footballers earn. You know, in America, again, we see millions of dollars being paid even to some of the stars that have come over from here to Major League Soccer. For your club, what's an average salary?
Yeah, like? I mean, it ranges from a top pay player would earn about £125,000 per year, going the way down to £20,000 per year. So from the top, a top paid player would be about £125,000 per year. And as I just said, the £20,000 for the bottom. Yeah, the average would work out about 40, probably 40, 50, maybe even £60,000 per year. So there's a good living to be had, but you're not, when you think that £125,000 per year, some people were earning £500,000 a year in the Premier League. So it's a better than an average wage if you're doing a normal job, but it's not. Everyone thinks it's going to be a lot bigger because what the Premier League wages are. So yeah, it's a good living, but our wage bill this year will be £2.3 million for the old roster. So for the year, that's what we would look to spend as a football club, and we're hitting our targets at the moment. We've got another transfer window to come in January, where some players at the moment we have a summer window, transfer window, which just shut. Now the window's shut for 4 months, and it opens again in January where we can start to do some trading again if we need to.
One of the things that's interesting is you're not just competing against the other clubs in your league. You're competing against the other clubs in all other leagues when it comes to salary, right? So, for instance, if you're a player and you're beyond 30 and you get offered more money by a lower level club, someone who's in their 30s may say, I'm at the end of my career, I'm going to take more money even though I'm playing in a lower league. Whereas someone in their 20s may say, I'll take less money because I want to play in the higher level league. Explain that to our audience.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for the audience to understand that, actually. I mean, there is teams in the National League, which is Wrexham's league,
right,
if I can give an example, where there's three or four of them teams that can compete and beat the top earners in Wrexham will have a bigger wage bill than the top team in League Two. The advantage Wrexham have got, there's no salary cap or financial restraints. You have to work within Level Five, but in Level Four you do. So they will have a big salary. There'll be other clubs within that league like Chesterfield, like Notts County. If you look at Level Five, the English people will understand this. There's an awful lot of league clubs, ex-league clubs in Level 5. When we took over the club, we was in Level 5 and we got out of that league in 2 years. But yeah, you can earn more money. And as you say, when you get older, remember it's a living. That's what people got to understand. I mean, I played the game personally for 18 years myself, and yeah, football is a living. And if you're looking to secure your family, or sometimes finances come into it. When you're a bit younger, like you explained there, it's about the ambition of playing as high as you possibly can. But then finances still comes into it. It comes into it a bit more when you get older, because you start to see that the end is nigh. You can't go on forever. We've got a player, as I just said, down practically at 37, which is unusual. You know, the average span is about 35. I mean, I started at 16 and finished at 34. So an 18-year career is seen as high, But yeah, you've got to look after your family like everything else. So finances will be a part of the decision making process of what club you play for.
One of the things I love about European football is the promotion and the relegation. Yeah. I cannot stand in American sports when a team tanks and tries to lose games in order to get a higher draft pick. We don't see that here. You don't perform well, you get relegated. You do perform well, you get promoted. Now, Leighton Orient, as I just mentioned, 19 points as we record this, and you're atop your league standings. Explain to our American listeners who are not familiar with this, how do you get promoted?
Yeah, I mean, for our league, there will be four teams that go up this year. So the top three will go up straight away. So if you finish first, second or third, you get promoted straight away. The teams in fourth, fifth, sixth and seventh play off for one more spot. So that's the plus side of it, and that's how four teams go up. But what you got to remember, there's two teams at the bottom of our league that will go into the National League. So all the way through the season, you are either looking upwards and thinking that you've got a chance of getting third, second or first, or into the playoffs. And sometimes if you're not having a very good season, you're looking over your shoulder, we called it, looking at that bottom. So it keeps fans engaged. Mm-hmm. It keeps managers and owners engaged, because you are either pushing for promotion or you're fighting relegation. This year so far, we've been pushing for promotion, and that has been the plan for the season. But there's, I really struggle when I watch the MLS on the TV and they talk about no promotion and no relegation. This takes everything of what the English game is built on, right, is taken away. I mean, we have got the Premier League where it's getting a bit repetitive in terms of, you know, Man City, Liverpool, probably the only two that can win it, in my opinion, at the moment. But it's, you know, it's always been competitive, and you've always got that promotion and relegation. And every year, there's probably, just trying to work out, you know, you got probably 11 teams that get relegated, and you get, but the same sort of amount going up. So out of a 92 team league, probably every year you're getting 25% that are going up or down. Mm. So you're always, we see ourselves, we come in at level five at National League. We believe Leighton Orient's a good League One club because it's proven to be that. So that's one level up from where we are now. We put a 6-year plan into process. We're now 6 year. We got out of the bottom one. Now the aim is to get out of this one. We'd like to do that this season, but we shall see. We have not, in the three seasons pre to this season, we've not ended up in the top seven yet. So this is the year where we're looking to end up in the top seven and have a chance of that promotion push.
You can feel the enthusiasm or the depression if you're about to get relegated, yeah, from the fans. I mean, that's another one. You know, you talk about how you're planning, 6-year plan. You've got the £2.3 million that you spent. But when you're a fan and you're really living and dying by every match, you can feel that. That's very tangible, I've noticed.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, 46 times a season, i.e. the 46 games, you're either up, down, or indifferent, either win, lose, or draw.
Yeah.
And I think fans, it affects them more. You know, if certain people that if you have a bad weekend in the football, you know, the wife chooses to keep well away from the husband, or the husband goes down to the pub. So, but yeah, you always, it's a marathon, not a sprint. That's what we always say. 46 games, as I say, probably 40 weeks of the season, then in games are split over. You're also in three cup competitions. So you're forever doing what we've done with you over the last last day and a half, where you're preparing for a game. So, for instance, we're now sitting outside O2 in Rochdale looking to play a game on a Tuesday night. But when the logistics, as soon as that game's finished, is how can we freshen up these boys as quick as we can, or players? How quick can we get them back to London? When are they next going to come in to train? because we'll be getting back in 2-3 o'clock in the morning, but you start preparing them for Saturday's game. So you're either recovering from a game or preparing for a game. There's very little time where you're just doing training for maintenance. It's very rare nowadays that you're doing that. You do your maintenance work and all the hard graft in the summer of pre-season work.
Okay, again, you're the director of football. I think our audience is interested in what does your staff look like? So you've got the coaching staff, the training staff, the analytics staff.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you can break that down a little bit. Again, it doesn't have to be super specific, but, you know, in America, we see all these different coaching staffs and the front office on the, you know, football, basketball, hockey operations side. And I think people are interested about that here.
Yeah, we've got, at first team level, we got 13 staff, including myself, so director of football. Then we've got head coach, who's assisted by two assistant coaches. Then you've got the goalkeeping coach, who are the people on the field every day. I'm not on the field at all, but them four are on the field every day. Then you got your medical team. You've got two medical people with us today, but that's our medical team, head of medical and assistant head of medical. We've got three analysts, two opponent analysts, so they'll be working on the teams we're playing and our strategy to help build to beat that team. And we've also got a recruitment analyst who doesn't travel with us. We've also got a recruitment scout that doesn't travel with us as well. So, and obviously we've got the kit man, who's the most important man. You've met Ada. He's the one that pulls everything together. You know, if anything is wanted, needed, or I think Ada will come up with a solution. That kit man is worth his weight in salt, to be honest with you, because the coach staff just have to nod and he knows what they want. And especially when it comes to match day, for players to get in, they like a routine. So, you know, the players will know what they want and Ada will know what them players want. The kit man is a massively important component, and Ada's been an excellent kit man here for over 20 years.
And you've got a new manager this year as well, new coach. That seems to be working out well. Again, as we record this, you're in first position, 19 points. But, you know, as you said, you played for 18 years. You're now directing football for the club. You've seen a lot of things, but there's nothing like a new coach coming in and injecting some new, fresh energy into the club.
Yeah, we were going stale last year. We had a good start last season. Under Kenny Jackett, then we hit a rut and we went really stale. We got in a real rut of defeats, and we chose to change the manager, or the coach, head coach, not the head coach that he is now. So then Richie Wellens, who's the head coach at the moment, come in last year, done a really good job at the end of last season. We was looking over our shoulder. Know what I talked about, that relegation?
Right.
We was never in there. Never felt that it was going to happen, but it was close enough for us to fear it might happen. Richie came in, turned everything around. And then he has brought 8 of his own players this summer that the recruitment team do between us. It's a big part that I'm involved in the recruitment of players. And along with, he kept a lot of the players that were here last year. So he was confident that they could do a job. And, yeah, it's going excellent so far this year. You know, 6 wins and 1 draw is an unbelievable start. But it is only a start. I mean, we've played, probably 15% of the season at the moment. There's an awful lot, a long way to go. But you'd rather be sitting with 19 points at the top than sitting at the bottom, that's for sure.
I've been around a lot of coaches, and just spending some time with you guys in the last 24 hours, I like the energy around this club. Whether it was the singing last night from some of the younger players to the trivia that took place, I think there's something to be said for team bonding off the field and building chemistry as much as there is, you know, performance on the pitch. Is that Richie? Is that is it a combination?
It's more Richie than me. I mean, yeah. I did I did Richie's job myself for 15 years. So I know what it's like to sit in that position. So I think that I have an empathy towards Richie because it's a difficult role. But the stuff that you see is pulled together by Richie and his team. I mean, I'm based 2 days a week at the training ground, 2 days a week at the main stadium. So I sort of dip in and out of it. But the one thing that you feel when you go over to the training ground, and ever since Richie's been in the building, is a vibe, a real good vibe around the place. And yeah, we had a quiz last night with the players and the staff. We had a little bit of a darts competition with just the staff when the players went to bed. And yeah, it's a good place to be at the moment. And when you're winning games of football, football clubs are a good place to be. But I feel that whatever happens in terms of win, lose or draw, the vibe would be the same. I think the biggest asset of any manager for me or head coach is your man management. Whether your man, and even with my job now as a director of football, my man management towards my staff, towards the players who I have less contact with, but I have enough contact to speak to, but they wouldn't come to me unless there was a major, major problem. They would go to the coaching staff to solve that problem. But there is a good vibe. Me and Richie, it's quite weird how it worked for me and Richie, really, is that I met him when we was looking for a new manager pre this time. I met him, but he had another job when he met me. He had the Doncaster job, and he told me honestly. And then he phoned me and said, "Look, I'm going to take the Doncaster job, but I really, really like what went on with us." And that's amazing how it sticks in your head. Was I really liked the vibe that I had with Richie at that time, and we was prepared. We was wanting to offer him the job, but he chose to go to Doncaster. And when the Doncaster thing didn't work out, and our thing didn't work out, it was still in my mind. And when I was asked by the board, I put Richie on the shortlist again to go and speak. When we go for a manager, we have a shortlist. I'll have a coffee with about 8 people and then probably push 4 or 5 people forward for the next phase. But have that first initial contact. I'd already done that with Richie, so I was quite keen for the board and everyone to meet him. And it proved that they liked him and he was the answer. And it just proves that sometimes you interview him for something that was a year ago, 18 months ago now, really, and then you take him a bit later because it hasn't worked out for you or for him, but you remember the interview you had over coffee. And the good thing about it, he had the Doncaster job, but he wanted to have a coffee to see what it was about. And that's good management and good sensibility, if that's such a word, for Richie to do that.
Yeah. Timing, right?
Time, of course, yeah. Oh, it's all about time. Football's all about timing.
Yeah. One of the things that I've been so impressed with. So for our listeners, I think most of my listeners know, this is my first trip to Europe. I've been all over the world for whatever reason. I've never been to Europe. The sense of community here around sport is unlike any place I've ever been in the world. And it could be the lads who are playing cricket from the local pub on the weekend and playing on a 200-year-old pitch and just doing it for the love and the camaraderie of the sport. Or it could be, families who have grown up going to matches and they go to the pub before and after the match. And it's just part of the fabric of the community here. You played for so long, like maybe you can explain that and where it comes from to our listeners.
Yeah, look, sport is life for me. You know, it's been 40 years for me. And I think sport would have been life even if I wasn't a professional footballer or professional football coach or professional football manager, because sport, I was brought up very in East London, very much in a sporting family. And you know, you get them, you know, I started to go and to watch West Ham is my team. Latin Orient supporters will boo when they hear me say that, but they are my team. I was brought up in West Ham, in Newham. And the community of that was there. And even later now, even though you haven't got, when I was a West Ham supporter, for instance, I would say 80%, maybe 90% of the people that come to West Ham walk to the stadium because you all lived locally.
Right.
Now that isn't the case for West Ham, and it ain't the case for Leighton Orient, because most of our supporters have moved out, but it's still that community. You still got your dad or your granddad, your dad and your child, and you try and pass it down, and We're getting a little bit of a new vibe in Orient as well, because it's an up and coming area. It was one of the areas in London that wasn't the best, and now it's been redeveloped. So you're now getting a new money, but people that now are moving into apartments that can walk back to Leighton Orient. But most of our support would come in on the train. But they would have been supporting the club for years. And it's life. It's family. You know, it's life for people. I mean, say for me, I don't know. You know, this weekend was really weird because we had a weekend off because of the Queen's passing. So we never had a game on Saturday. And, you know, during the summer, I've had Saturdays where I've not had football and managed to do something. But this Saturday just seemed to go on forever because I had no football to go to. My job, I had no football to watch on the telly. I even found my wife, which I've been married to for 33 years. I ain't seen this. I said, "What are you doing here?" She said, "Oh, I'm here when you watch football." Yeah, and my life is sport. Right. I admit that, and without sport, but it is inbred, and you're born into it, and it could be a different sport. It could be cricket, as you say. It could be whatever it can be, but most families would have a sporting link somewhere that dominates their life, and it's big in England. It's massive in England. I mean, what other country could, the size of England, support, what you got, 92, 116 full-time teams that people go to every week and go and watch and support, and everyone's got a fan base that's, you know, ranging from 70,000 to maybe 2,000, but there's loads of teams below that as well.
I mean, that's really amazing because, you know, you look at the United States, like New York, Los Angeles, Chicago. Yeah. Imagine there being 116 teams in one of those cities. That's what we've got in London.
Yeah. Well, in England. So you've got 116 professional football teams in England. As you say, and each of them have got their own community. Each of them have got their own story. You're talking about Leighton Orient, 1881, and they're all have. And it's, you know, there's been a lot of talk about how strong the Premier League is, and is it detrimental to the Football League? I don't think it is. I think that you're always going to have the pyramid. I think and if you speak to the Premier League clubs deep down, they know the strength of English football is the pyramid. So us sitting in League Two right this moment in time, on top of it, we can dream about being in the Premier League. Hmm. Now, whether that ever happens, you know, it's a very, very long shot, but you can dream it. There's nothing to stop it happening because there is a structure that can take you there.
Yeah.
So that, I think that's the strength of the English game.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, for American fans, this would be like your favorite minor league baseball team playing at the level of the New York Yankees and Boston Red Sox.
Yeah.
And having the ability to move up to the major league baseball level, or, you know, USFL or XFL team being able to move up to the NFL.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. So I like the structure here more because the fans can dream. The, you know, organization can dream, and you can always be plotting ahead versus, well, let's tank some games and get a better draft pick.
Yeah. And when you said that on the coach yesterday, and I didn't realize that I knew that if you finish bottom, you got the first draft. I didn't think that there would be an actual way of trying to make yourself bottom. That would be frowned upon here, massively. You know, tanking, you call it. We call it chucking the game. You know, they're just not trying. And I suppose it's not, can't be proven, but that's what obviously happens. Yeah, we would struggle with. Well, I do struggle. You know, when I look at the MLS and I struggle knowing that the MLS is going to look the same next year as it does this year. That, and for me, that just ain't real football, because you ain't fighting for you. Sometimes you need to be fighting for your life to survive, to keep out of relegation. Sometimes you learn more about yourself in them situations than you do when you're winning things. And to see people perform under that pressure, I think it, 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 it's a real test. And I think for me, the American way of, and I understand why they do it in terms of the size of the franchises and the finances of it. And you can't forever drop between there and there, but you know, you've got to adapt, learn.
Yeah. Martin Ling, the director of football for Leighton Orient. Thank you so much for letting me embed with the team. I've learned a lot just from watching your inner operations. I'm looking forward to the match this evening, the match on Saturday, spending some time with Nigel. Next week, we'll focus more on the business operations of Leighton Orient. You've got streaming service that's launching, an app, a lot of new things. The sports betting here is so different than in America. I mean, it is crazy how advanced you guys are here and how much longer you've been doing it, and that you can basically bet on anything with request to bet and services like that. So I'm looking forward to that. But where are we right now? Like in Manchester?
Yeah, we're in Rochdale. I just had the lady in there about Manchester. She said, no, we're Greater Manchester. So there's obviously a reason. We're not actually in Manchester. We're in Greater Manchester. We're in Rochdale. And for your listeners, I just want to say, Brian, yesterday morning, got round the underground from where he was to Leighton. And he found his way, and it was a miracle when he phoned me and said, I'm at the coach at 9:15 to go. But it was good going, first time, a good attempt. And Manchester, look, lovely. You say we're 4 hours from London, as you know. And you're going to have an inside run on it tonight. We're going to let you go in the dressing room, see what goes on in how Richie works and how the team work, and you're going to be close to it. I think it'd be interesting for you. So I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, I will. And we'll talk about it on our show next week. And navigating the underground yesterday, it was interesting. I mean, any city I've ever been to on earth, you can get a taxi or an Uber. Apparently not in London when you were trying to get to the other side. I was on the west side trying to get to the east side.
Correct.
So I had to get on the underground. Martin was kind enough to talk me through the different ways to navigate to get from Richmond, home of AFC Richmond, the fictitious team of Ted Lasso, to Leighton, and I made it. So thank you.
Although it's quite weird. I made out in my head that he was a child. So I said, you get on the green line, get off the green line and get on the red line with a name of a station. And it can be confusing, but well done.
I literally, when I was at the park the other day, I saw some lads playing cricket.
Yeah.
And I said, explain cricket to me like I'm 3 years old.
Yes.
So you explained the underground to me like I was 3 years old, and I appreciate it.
Good to talk, Mike.
Thanks, Martin.
Cheers, Mike.
5G is here. Is your stadium ready? From an immersive fan experience to efficient game day operations, 5G is transforming sports and entertainment. If you're ready to jumpstart your 5G transformation, look no further than Boingo Wireless. Boingo is one of the largest operators of indoor wireless networks in the U.S. They provide stadiums and arenas with state-of-the-art 5G networks and support teams across the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, Major League Soccer, and NCAA. I'm constantly interacting with sports executives, and the reason they love working with Boingo is because Boingo manages 5G and Wi-Fi networks end-to-end, offloading very stretched IT teams. Whether your stadium is looking to support mobile ticketing, cashless payment, or connected operations, Boingo has you covered. But don't just take it from me. Their customers include world-class venues like Soldier Field, State Farm Arena, Petco Park, and University of Louisville. Boingo in 5G. Now that's what I call a win-win. For a limited time, Boingo has a special offer for Sports Business Radio listeners. They're offering a free 5G assessment for your stadium or arena. To get started, simply email sbradio@boingo.com and mention this podcast. That's sbradio@boingo.com. Our thanks to Boingo for their continued support of Sports Business Radio.
Now, here's Brian's conversation with Nigel Travis from September 2022.
All right, everyone. I am still in London, and I just took in another Leighton Orient match. And last week, we focused on the business of football and the roster with Martin Ling, the director of football.
Now I'm with the chairman of Leighton Orient, also a previous guest on Sports Business Radio. He has worked as the chair at Dunkin', Baskin Robbins, Blockbuster. You're on the board of Abercrombie, lots of different American companies as well. Nigel Travis, thanks for hosting me this week. It's been an educational experience.
It's been fun. I've only been here for today because I flew in from Boston early this morning. But it's been great having you, Brian. And unfortunately, you're not going back to Portland because since you've been here, we are, as the Americans say, 2-0. And we've let no goals in, right?
A clean sheet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm the good luck charm that you need it.
Yeah, and then Richie, head coach, says you can't go back.
So for everyone out there, we talked about this last week, but Leighton Orient is League Two, and you're trying to get promoted, and you had a six-year plan, and you're in year five of the six-year plan?
Well, I think, to be honest, it's year six.
Okay.
But you could say because of however long you count COVID, you know, whether that's a pass or not, we can debate.
Right. But you sit atop the standings right now. So I know there's a long way to go this season, but right now you're looking promising.
Yeah, right now we have, 25 out of 27 points. So we're in a good position.
Very good position.
And our goal difference, which for the audience is if everyone's equal on points, they use goal difference, which is goals scored minus goals let in, as the factor that determines who goes up. So goal difference is important.
Okay. Also, for our audience who may have missed my interview with Nigel a couple of years ago, you grew up a Leighton Orient fan. You came to this stadium with your family, and the team was in distress a few years ago, and the opportunity came up for you and a few others to purchase the team. Not everyone gets to purchase the team that they grew up loving and were a fan of, but it comes with a lot of responsibility. I mean, I've walked around with you today, and, you know, like I said on last week's podcast, the fans here are at a next level. It's different than what I see in America. This is part of the fabric of their life. So a lot of pressure comes with being the chairman of Leighton Orient.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Firstly, going right back to the start, yes, I first came here. Where we're sitting now was where I first came, but with a different stand.
Yeah.
In 1959. I've supported the club there for 63 years till I'm 72. As you say, we had an owner whose name I can't say because we don't say it anymore.
Okay.
And who left the club in a terrible state. We were, for those watching the Wrexham series in the National League, which is where Wrexham are, and we managed to get promotion after 2 years. But when we bought the club, I was very fortunate that a gentleman who's my great friend and partner now, Ken Teague, came along and put up the majority of the financing at the time. And we've had a great partnership. We've had terrific board members, many of whom are American as well as British. And we are on this six-year journey. And at the moment, things are looking good. But as I've said, and Brian, you've heard me say this like 20 times today, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Right.
We've only got 37 games to go to the end of the season. So it's nice to be 4 points clear, but it is a very long marathon.
One of the reasons I'm here in Europe is to differentiate between American sports and European sports. Last week with Martin, we talked about promotion and relegation. From the business standpoint, what does it mean if Leighton Orient gets promoted up to League One? How does that impact the franchise?
Okay. So the first thing I would say is in my 63 years, we've been just about everywhere. So just to run through it, so your listeners have got a clear idea from a historical perspective of how promotion and relegation works. So they changed the name of the leagues over time, but I'm going to use the modern terms. So when I came here in 1959 for the first time, we were in what's now called the Championship. 3 years later, we went up to the Premier League. We actually beat Manchester United at home 1-0.
Wow.
And we did go up with Liverpool. And then we came down after 1 year. And then we stayed in what was then called the Championship. Sorry, then called League Two, but Championship for a few years. Then went down to what is now League One. Stayed there for some time. Went down to League Two, as it's called now. Then back to League One. And then when the previous owner owned the club, after being in League One for a long time, he took us down immediately to League Two, and 2 years later down to the National League. Mm. So we've been up and down. And to answer your question, effectively in the current financial situation, if we go to the League One, it's probably worth them about $1 million extra a year. And to put that into context, this year we're expecting to lose about $1.5 million.
Okay.
And as I think I've said before, most clubs in the EFL, which is the three leagues below the Premier League, lose money. So promotion is important for us, but that also has some higher costs for players and what have you.
Right.
Martin said last week that our budget's about 2.3. It's probably one of the higher ones in this league. If we go up to League One, it's probably 4 or 5 million. If we go up to the Championship, it's probably in the range of 10 to 20 million. So, you know, players get paid more as you go up. But we should also make more money. We get more fans to the games. And as you've seen personally today, more away fans is an important part of that. The team we played today probably bought 200. And because there is, and I know Americans find this somewhat odd, separation between the away fans and the home fans, if the away section isn't sold out, we can't fill it with home fans. So our away section holds 1,300. There's probably 200, 250 away fans today. So we had over 1,000 spare seats that we couldn't sell.
So you're marketing to away fans too, or you're hoping they're going to show up.
Yeah.
Because any tickets that aren't sold for the away section, you can't sell to your Leighton Orient fans. Is that correct?
That's correct. And one of the things I think is interesting that Americans perhaps don't get about U.S. soccer, and it was interesting. Someone showed me in the middle of the week a P&L for a championship club that someone was looking to buy, and it was interesting trying to explain to them some of the differences. And the differences are, firstly, you cannot sell alcohol in front of the pitch. Hmm. And you saw yourself today.
Yeah.
We bring down the blinds just before the game starts because you cannot be lifting a pint and watch football at the same time. That all goes back to various events that happened in the 70s and 80s. There is not the same propensity to turn up at the game early that you see in the States with tailgating. And one of the reasons is there's not the space around most grounds.
Right.
There's the separation of the fans, which again goes back to some of the stadium disasters that we had in the 70s, 80s, and the safety laws as a result to avoid violence. And going back to one of the disasters, a major fire, are much more brutal here than they are in America. And that means that there's a lot of restrictions that keeps our P&L somewhat restricted.
Yeah, I mean, for my listeners, I didn't know this, but there's a section of the stadium here. It's literally segregated for the away fans. So the away fans and the home fans cannot interact. There's like a wall up that prevents them from interacting. So you wouldn't see that in America, whether it's a college football game, an NBA game, an NFL game. There are fans of opposing teams that are sitting in the same areas. You're able to drink alcohol in the seating bowl. You know, maybe they cut off sales after the third period, but you're able to drink beer or alcohol in the seating bowl. That is not allowed here for the reasons that you just outlined. So when you get into the business of running a club over here, it's almost like the more successful you are, the more money you can make, but also the more expenses you have with your roster. And then you still have the restrictions of the ticket sales to the away fans. If those don't sell out, then you have to eat those seats, basically. And then also the alcohol sales. And for most franchises in America, the alcohol sales are a huge part of their bottom line.
Well, it's interesting. I've done some comparisons, and I won't share which clubs are which, but essentially, clubs, let's call it big franchises in the States.
Okay.
What's known as the cap rate, in other words, the amount of stuff like food, beverage, merchandise, and sometimes things like car parking in the States for big franchises are probably in $25-$30 mark. I was at a USL, which is like the second tier of US soccer game last Saturday, and that's like $19-$20. Here, it's about £4. So
huge difference.
A lot of it is those restrictions that you felt out.
Right.
And I think we, as a game over here, need to focus on what we can do to elevate that, because that's a lot of lost revenue that the club are picking up.
You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back after this.
Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. It's also the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Your fantasy leagues might be over, but you can still play fantasy sports games on Underdog Fantasy. I love playing Pick'em and Rivals. With Pick'em, you can pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. You can win 20 times your money in a single night. You pick between 2 and 5 players to build a Pick'em entry. Also, Rivals pits 2 players against each other. That's a lot of fun, too. It could be 2 players on the same team. It could be 2 players from other teams. Points, rebounds, fantasy points. It's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying that with NBA games, especially right now. Sign up today with promo code SBR and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Visit UnderdogFantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with my promo code SBR, like Sports Business Radio, to get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18 plus and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org.
Now, back to Sports Business Radio with Brian Berger.
So how do you do that? I mean, do you get all of the owners of the soccer clubs at all the different levels together and say, we're leaving a lot of money on the table? Or we need to put some security in place so we can sell alcohol in the seating bowl, but not have riots and fires and things of that nature. How do you fix that?
Well, taking the alcohol one, there was a government report, which essentially came after several clubs went out of business, which I think in America would be perceived to be, okay, the club went out of business. But here, that's a loss of a major institution in the community. And I think you said on your podcast last week, when you were talking to Martin, that the community identification with the club is so significant here.
Yeah, very deep.
And it's, so that was one of the factors. And then we had this so-called Super League that was talked about. So the government set up an inquiry, and that inquiry actually said that for clubs at our level, which is League Two, there should be a trial of alcohol again. The police were dead against it. The police thought that was an awful idea, so it's unlikely to happen. And your point about getting together with the other clubs, I think one of the things that's actually very positive about football or soccer here is that people truly believe that they can work together. I mean, we work with other clubs. You sat with our opponents today. Everyone gets on absolutely fine.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a case of us getting together. It's basically controlled by legislation.
Hmm.
And we need to influence politicians or the police to make a change.
Do you see that happening in the next 5-10 years, or is that such an uphill battle? And is this such tradition here that it's going to be hard to change?
I think if we think about it hard enough, I think there's, could you restrict the alcohol, or could you allow people like in our, what Americans would call sweet areas,
right,
to drink and still watch the game? I mean,
yeah,
they're not going to suddenly run on the pitch from the,
right,
from those tweets. So I think there needs to be some consideration. I think it is also ironic that a view against our current law is a lot of people go to the pub, get, as we say, tanked up,
right,
before they come to the stadium. And then at halftime, people go and have a quick drink in 10 minutes, which is probably the fastest way of getting drunk, rather than having a slow drink as you're watching. So I think it may change, but I think a much bigger issue is the whole issue of redistribution. And this is a very complicated subject that's been brought to fore by these clubs going out of business. And there is a view that there needs to be redistribution between the Premier League and the EFL, which the Championship, League One and League Two. And we as the EFL are pushing for 25% of the joint media rights. And I think progress will take place over that. And we're very well led in the EFL. And I think this is going to be big news over the next probably 6 to 9 months.
English Premier League, they get lots of money for the sponsors on their kits. Is that equivalent at this level? I know it's not dollar for dollar equivalent, but when I'm looking at the revenue streams at this level, is that one of the main revenue streams, is the kit sponsorship?
Well, kit sponsorship and other sponsorship is a big opportunity. And we have been quite creative in the past. I mean, our front of shirt sponsor is actually Harry Kane. And for those who don't know Harry Kane, and you should know Harry Kane, is the England soccer captain. At the start of the pandemic, which was a very bad time for the world, but also a bad time for football because we had to carry on playing despite the pandemic. We approached Harry Kane, who a long time ago at the start of his career came from Tottenham Hotspur, where he's always played, to Leighton Orient on loan. And he graciously agreed to sponsor us, and he's now done it for 3 years. And we have 3 kits for different charities. And our first kit, our red kit, is Shout, which is for mental health. We also have another kit for a big charity called the Tommy Club. And then we have one for a hospice for children. So Harry Kane has been incredibly gracious. We're very proud of our relationship with him. But I think the point is that I think over time, this game is growing and growing. And I think you're going to see more access to the EFL across the world, which should bring more money into the game. And by the way, we're not just asking as an EFL to take all the money from the Premier League. It's the joint media. So we should be making more money as well. And the game is obviously number one game in the world. And I think people love the idea of promotion, relegation, the drama that comes with it.
Yeah.
And I think programs like Wrexham are going to help everyone understand it. And obviously your podcast as well. So I think the broadcasting will improve and that should help our economics.
Yeah, I mean, you told me, I don't know, a week ago on the phone that you thought because of Ted Lasso and Welcome to Wrexham that the value of the franchises over here have increased substantially.
Yeah.
Is that?
Well, it's undoubtedly true because I think Americans keep coming in. I mean,
right.
I've forgotten how many American owners in the Premier League, but a lot. I mean, we played a team in our league today, Walsall. They just got new American ownership. Bournemouth, the latest club to rumors, that hasn't happened yet, of American ownership. So I think it's attracting Americans in, and they look at the cost of buying, taking at the top level, a Premier League club against a NFL franchise or MLB or basketball or hockey and think there's great value here.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, also at the moment, with the pound-dollar rate, you're effectively getting, well, depends how you take the true exchange rate. I've always taken it to be about 160. We're down to about 115. So you get a significant discount. So I think you'll continue to see a lot of American owners come here. And as you've experienced yourself, I think the excitement level driven by the promotion and relegation is staggering. And I think that will also bring people in.
Yeah. Media rights and streaming, those are other revenue opportunities for clubs. You know, our audience knows what this means in America. What does it mean over here? I know you just launched a streaming service and explain to our audience, I mean, you get to keep most of that revenue, I'm assuming. So that's a great opportunity for your club.
So soccer is a pretty conservative business. And a lot of people through the years have opposed any kind of TV rights.
Mm-hmm.
When I grew up, there was no football on TV. And it's gradually become more prevalent, but it's still controlled. For reasons that are too complex to explain, we can't show 3 o'clock kickoff games live. And the result is now, and this was a big innovation about 5 years ago, the EFL came up with a streaming service. We sit, when we were in the National League, which is the league below, we actually had our own streaming service. So we were very enthusiastic about joining with the league, but we took their feed and then topped and tailed it by having a pregame show, which by the way, anyone can watch on YouTube, a halftime show and a postgame show. So we kind of are trying to make it as close to broadcast quality as we can. So we do all that ourselves. Every game is streamed on our website, latenorient.com, quick plug. £10 a game. And we're gradually increasing our number of overseas viewers. We're excited about that. I think the broadcast rights, as I mentioned earlier, for the EFL will continue to grow. Most of the games in the States are shown on ESPN Plus. But I think you know, the excitement of all these battles for promotion and relegation. And now that more and more people understand it, I think the media rights will grow.
You have an interesting perspective because you live in London and you live in America. You also know, as you alluded to earlier, owners of American sports franchises. Does that joint perspective help you in both countries and especially as the chairman of Leighton Orient?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I truly think it does give me kind of a unique perspective. I think I'm lucky that Boston is so close to London. It's, you know, 5.5 hours last night. And I'm fortunate, as you say, I've known a lot of great owners. I mean, the Krabs, obviously, and the Patriots, the Red Sox, great organization who've always been helpful to us. I think I have a good perspective of how far you can push American ideas and how far you can't. I think a lot of things are very different. I mean, you said to me today, the access to the fans and the ownership is amazingly different.
I mean, you walk amongst the supporters. They call them supporters here, not fans. You walk amongst the supporters. And I joked with you that owners in America, they're in their luxury box. They're going up and down the elevator. They're going between their car and the luxury box. They're not out amongst the people very rarely. So it is different here. You know, you're shaking hands with people. People are coming up and giving you opinions, good or bad. And you're subjecting yourself to that when a lot of owners in America wouldn't do that.
It's interesting. I mean, one of our board members, one of the reasons we bought the club is Kent T, who, as I said earlier, is a great friend and partner. He is the best at doing what I call management by walking around, which is a management phrase in the book In Search of Excellence, Tom Peters and Waterman. And he walked around the ground. He walks into pubs. Fans have asked him home for lunch, dinner, and he goes.
Wow.
And I think one big difference with American sports is the fans are part of our constituency.
Right.
I mean, when I was running Dunkin', it was important to me to know the views of franchisees, but not just the representatives, the average franchisees. Mm-hmm. So I'd set up opportunities to meet all of those franchisees, and we had like 2,000. So I think the closeness of ownership to the fans is much stronger here. And I think what comes with that is a certain amount of emotion, because this is a very emotional game.
Yeah.
And people have emotional opinions, and you just have to sometimes stand back from it all. And that is one benefit of living in America.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about segregation of the opposing fans from the home fans. I think in America, the owners are segregated in large part from the supporters and the fans.
Yeah. And I think that actually causes a problem, because they aren't in tune with the fans' thinking. I mean, we have, and again, I think you'd be surprised, we have 3 fan podcasts.
Right. And you sit down with the podcast, and your coach sits down with the podcast. Like, again, in America, that doesn't typically happen.
No, and it's all to do with the media rights and who owns the game. But, I mean, we're considered to be a leader in that. I wouldn't say we're the absolute leader. We can always do better. But a major part of that report, the government report, is effectively clubs here are seen as community assets.
Yeah.
And you heard a fan say to me that I'm a temporary custodian of the club. And that is something I believe in. It's actually cost us a lot of money to be the temporary.
No kidding.
But, you know, I see this as something that we're doing for the community of Leighton and the greater and the surrounding area.
How has your experience with the big brands, Dunkin' and Baskin Robbins and Abercrombie and, you know, the many brands that you've worked with, Blockbuster, how has that helped you in the position of chairman of Leighton Orient?
Well, I think the first thing I'd say, I think this is very important. You need to listen to your customer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's get back to that discussion we just had about fan. I think we could always find opportunities for more revenue. So that's important. And you look into the numbers. I think I've learned over time, and we didn't always get it right, that to have the right culture in the organization is critical. And we feel that our head coach, who you, I think, had a nice walk with earlier, Richie, we got a guy who really engages with the players, engages with his coaches. And I think that's important. And I think culture is perhaps, someone said at a management conference in New York to me, I see culture is like the big buzzword, but it's so important. And I think that's a real learning.
Yeah.
So I think that helps. I think that the way Americans look at finance is also somewhat different. We're very big on risks and opportunities of projecting forward. We're less focused on history. Can't rewrite history. Look forward and project forward and how you're going to hit those targets. So I think that makes you slightly more aggressive in the way you look at things. And so I think it's helped me enormously. And I'm very fortunate to have a great board who've got a lot of experience. We've got a McKinsey consultant. Kent used to work at Microsoft. We've got people who are entrepreneurs. We've got one guy who runs a major sports business, professional darts. I've got my son who's on the board who works at Sky, so he's an expert in broadcasting.
Yeah.
So we all got this expertise, and it comes together. And the question you haven't asked me, but I'll answer it anyway. Would I do it all again? You bet. It's fantastic.
That's great. Just a few minutes left. We just poked our heads in and walked about a half of the women's soccer club. And you know, this has been such an area of growth in America. You know, the WNBA is growing, the NWSL, there's a lot of area for growth here. I mean, I will be candid, and I said this to you, you know, off air. I think from what I've seen here, it's a little bit behind America as far as the development and growth of women's sports, but that seems like another great area of growth potential here.
Yeah, we think so. I think it's interesting, the success, I think, of women's cricket is probably a leader. And it's interesting, one of the car companies, which I can't remember which one, so I won't name it because I'll get it wrong, had a very successful sponsorship of women's cricket. So women's football has been behind. I think it's come a long way in 5 years. I think the Lionesses, as they're called, winning the Euros this summer is going to catapult it.
Yeah.
At Lake Orient, we've got our women's team, who, as you say, first time ever playing a doubleheader the same day as the men. And they played some beautiful football based on what we saw.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've also got a new deal with Tottenham Hotspur women who play in the Women's Super League. So they're going to play a lot of their games here. We're going to get a hybrid pitch as a result of that. We're hoping to attract some Tottenham fans to Leighton Orient games. And hopefully some of our fans will turn up to watch their game when they're here on a Sunday. So I think we've got twin strategies of pushing women's football forward. But I see the strength of women's sports in the States. And I think there is signs that it's beginning to break through here.
Yeah.
I've heard of one big game in the WSL that's not taking place for weeks, where they've already sold 33,000 tickets.
Wow.
So I'm very optimistic about the future of women's sports.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I'm impressed with your operation here and the chemistry that your football staff has, that your business staff has, even the game day operations. You walk around the stadium and everyone has a smile on their face and they shake your hand and they're very welcoming. So I think you've got a lot of potential here. I think it's great that this is the team that you grew up with as a boy. So I'm sure you're invested in a way that you wouldn't be if this was just, you know, a spreadsheet purchase and you didn't have that connection. But I can't tell you how much I appreciate you welcoming me in the last week and letting me kind of poke my head under the hood a little bit. And like I told you, for our listeners, it was important to hear from the people who are actually making these decisions, a chairman like yourself or Martin, who's building the roster, instead of just asking the supporters what they think. So thank you so much for having me here.
Well, Brian, I think having you here has actually helped us, but it gives us perspective on two or three issues, because you can never have enough insight in what perhaps you're missing. I mean, we're very close to it, despite the fact that I say I'm in Boston, so I'm not that close.
Right.
But to have someone from outside coming in and spending time with us, thank you for your investment in time. And one last plug, if anyone wants to watch a Leighton Orient game, please go to leightonorient.com and stream it, £10 a game.
Well, I'll tell you this, a lot of people in America watch Ted Lasso, and they've adopted AFC Richmond as their team, even though they don't actually play games. Leighton Orient is my adopted team now. I'll be watching the games on the stream. I'll be following the podcasts and watching from afar from America. So this is my team now. I'm invested.
And you now know not to take on our goalkeeper on a quiz night.
That is true. Yes, you have the smartest goalkeeper when it comes to trivia that I've ever seen. Nigel Travis, chairman of Leighton Orient, thank you so much.
Thank you, bro.
There's nothing common about you. Not your talent, your drive, your achievements, or even your challenges. You need distinctive financial strategies that match your lifestyle and career trajectory. Morgan Stanley Global Sports and Entertainment was created to address your specific needs at every stage of your career and deliver the financial education and strategies you need to help advance your game plan. They speak the language. They know your business. Morgan Stanley will work with you to achieve your goals. I've trusted Morgan Stanley with my personal wealth management for almost 20 years. Visit Morgan Stanley at morganstanley.com/GSE. That's morganstanley.com/GSE.
Well, that's it for this edition of Sports Business Radio. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks to the Sports Business Radio team, Brian Griggs, Josh Blank, Ryan Nakajima, Colby Ackerman, and from our friends at CG Sports, CG Young and Nicole Wardle.
I'm Brian Berger. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon right here on Sports Business Radio.
This and every SBR podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and your favorite listening app. Follow Sports Business Radio on Facebook, Twitter at SB Radio, Instagram at Sports Business Radio, and online at sportsbusinessradio.com. Sports Business Radio is produced by Brian Griggs and Griggs Productions, griggsproductions.com.